everybody. Welcome back to Right to the Source. My name is Robin Harrison, and as ever, I'm joined by the rigs to my Myrtle, Mr. Ed Birkin. Ed, how are you on this fine day?
I am very well, thank you, Robin. A good classic pairing. Am I rigs or Myrtle?
I gave you rigs.
Rigs. Okay, I like that. He's the one that, you know, everyone prefers. The Maverick.
Slightly problematic.
Yeah, I mean, he does have his fair share of problems. Some call him slightly egotistical. Chicks dig him. Can you say that in the 21st century? Probably can. Don't know.
Sure,
I mean, given I get bleeped out for saying the word then that's probably going to get bleeped out anyway. But yeah, no, I can take that. Which was your favourite one?
Probably two.
Okay.
I thought it was the best one.
Is that the one when he sat on the toilet?
I think that was... Was that...
Is that the one where Rick...
Myrtle was sitting with the bomb. I think that might have been... was that three?
I don't know.
And also we've managed to... In fact, let's not say what we're talking about. Because we're not offering people a life raft of naming the franchise. So if they don't know the characters, this is going to mean nothing to them.
Yeah.
Let's leave it like that.
Sounds good. And also, you say ever-present, but to be honest, we seem to be doing this about once every 2 weeks because you're complaining that your day job takes up too much time. As if you've even prepped for this, as if it takes more than 40 minutes of your life.
I'm not complaining that my day job takes up too much of my time because... Right, so let's think about last week. Where were you?
Thursday afternoon and Friday I was around. Monday I was in Latvia giving a presentation to the new regulator. Tuesday I was in Amsterdam meeting a very important person. And Wednesday I was in Poland at the European Economic Congress.
Exactly. So if you're spawning about...
Thursday, Friday, I was around. I just can't help that H2 is in demand to give the, you know, best market intelligence view to regulators and governments.
So I kept my Monday free, my Tuesday free, my Wednesday free. The week, the meetings had piled up. Because I was keeping all those days free.
While
you're off gallivanting.
I'm going to keep using different words and see what the line is for your new producer. Well, bleep me out.
While you're off interrailing.
I wish. Ryanair and Lot Airlines. Anyway, lots to talk about.
Last week,
we talked about prediction markets. And
And before this, I obviously said, let's not talk about prediction markets.
I know, but since that came out, and since you actually,
yep.
by the time you'd got round to publishing my article on it and report, at the same time, Brazil had banned them. Not banned them, just said if you want to do sports betting, you need to get a sports betting license, otherwise you're an illegal sports betting operator.
No, that happened. That happened on Friday. That happened on Friday because, so, I get a call from our editor at large in Brazil, Guildo Massa, who's absolutely phenomenal, or his call or text, whatever.
Such a bromance, it's ridiculous.
Saying that, what were we saying? He was saying, "Yep, this press conference has been called." On sports betting, so you think, shit. You know, considering all the saber-rattling, yes, it is probably electioneering by Lula, but you do think, oh God, why are they calling a press conference on it? Especially with, I think, the Minister of Finance and the equivalent of the kind of like presidential chief of staff. So you think it's going to be something quite big. And then, obviously, they're talking about Mercados Provisores, I think the phrase is, a lot of the press conference was in Portuguese, so Guildo is obviously following, and then in WhatsApp, in my mediocre Portuguese, did he just say this? That, at one point, actually, and probably the best Portuguese I used was, this must be like watching TV with a child that won't shut up.
And while you two were watching this, I already knew about it and had already posted on LinkedIn, much to your displeasure.
Yes, so we put together the story, and I'll go into it a bit more because I think you can have glossed over some of the important points.
I don't think that people need to know this much detail about you writing a story with your new best friend.
Well, we worked hard, we got it out, sat back, and then a click on LinkedIn, and then, oh God, Ed just put out a half-arse tweet on it.
Yeah.
But essentially what has been done is there's been a resolution from the National Monetary Council of Brazil, which has basically said these are applicable subjects for derivative markets. And of course, it doesn't include anything about the weather, entertainment, sport, whatever else. They were very careful in just ticking all the stuff that essentially has brought these markets into that retail environment. So it's a good way of doing it. It's not running the rule over saying, you know, are these markets permitted or not? It's just narrowing the scope of what they can do.
Yeah, effectively what a derivative contract is designed for, rather than turning it into just a sports book or little, playground to do novelty bets on what person's going to sing what song at whenever. So, I think it takes away the argument that these markets are going to be worth a trillion in volume and 10 billion opportunity. And quite frankly, it's going to make the US operators who are doing this look quite foolish at some point.
Well, when there's a guy in France who wins a pretty chunky bet on temperatures by standing by the temperature sensor with a hairdryer.
Yes, no, I did see that. Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, Charles de Gaulle Airport. The guy bet that the temperature in Paris was going to be above a certain amount and then just tampered with the sensor just to win it. I mean, it is just nuts.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Well, look, talking, and let's move on from prediction markets, but a little segue talking about manipulation.
Manipulation, okay.
Well, putting a hairdryer on a thermometer is manipulation of temperature, yeah.
But I'm interested in the segue. Where are you going?
Well, I know it's kind of going back a bit, but the the NCAA president effectively wrote asking prediction markets to stop accepting bets on college players, given that the federal prosecutors unsealed this point shaving indictment earlier in the year. And again, it's just the fact that, like, to be honest, I believe that college sports should be allowed to be wagered on by legal operators, because the significant majority of integrity things are actually picked up. Well, they're all picked up by legal operators because legal operators don't report them, but most of the activity is with the legal operators. So banning them doesn't work. But again, with prediction markets, there's none of the integrity stuff. So they won't get picked up.
Yeah.
I think the US is in a difficult position here. DraftKings effectively came out and said, we don't think any state regulator will be putting up taxes or should put up taxes in the current environment, because if they do, we'll effectively just operate with a prediction market and not pay them anything. And I mean, that is pretty...
It's not great.
Ballsy. And that's why I think it's going to come back and get them. And then the CTFC has now sued Arizona. Anyway, we're not talking about prediction markets, but...
No, you said let's move on from prediction markets.
Yeah, and that's actually then...
further down the rabbit hole.
Talk about the NCAA. But let's talk about other regulations. So, what's happened in the last few weeks? Portugal, centralised self-exclusion system. So, rather than having to self-exclude with every operator, it's now just across all operators. Very sensible. Think it should be in every market. Tick. Good. Australia, gambling ad reforms, they've been described as draconian. It's not a total ad ban. Could have been worse.
No. I think they wanted to go a lot harsher.
Yeah. I think Brazil, as you talked about, could, are probably going to go down some form of route at some point with an advertising restriction. Hopefully not a full ban. And that segues into Brazil. And Caixa have said they are now pausing their launch of the online betting. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, until 2027.
Which is, quite something, given it's been ready for, a year now. partnering Playtech. But I love this. I love this this analysis. So they've spent 30 million on a payment for the license, and it's a 5-year license. Now, so there's questions about whether it's a good use of public funds for them to have this license they paid for not using it.
So that would be
essentially. Don't take away the analysis. Febrilot, the Lottery Federation, estimates Kite's inaction causes about 6 million a year in losses over the 5-year license. You see what they've done there? They've put out an estimate where they've divided 30 million by 5 years, and they've estimated it's about 6 million a year. I mean, at least it's a correct number.
Let me just check the maths on that. So 30 divided by 5. I don't know if you can see that, but that is a 6. That's a 6. They've...
It's better than people claiming a natural number of something that's complete rubbish. So, but yeah. So they did also claim they were going to get to number one when they launched, and I just cannot see them being anywhere near, quite frankly.
If they were coming out as the market opened, yeah, they'd be there or thereabouts.
Still don't think so.
No, I think the power of these brands is kind of
underestimating the operating expertise of.
I'm not at all. I mean, these are fantastic operators, but I think there's an element of trust that these sort of endemic brands. Because I don't think there's a lot of gambling brands that can really kind of call themselves like fully endemic. Whereas, you know, whether it's, you know, like a Caixa, a Danske Spel, a Svenska Spel, they have a place in society.
Sorry, didn't we do a podcast quite recently on, was it Norway? Where effectively the lottery had completely messed up all this stuff. So yes, they may be well known, but I don't believe that lotteries are necessarily, you know, this hugely trusted, everyone loves them kind of thing.
I'm not saying they're trusted and beloved. I'm saying they are endemic. Like, everyone knows the brand because they've seen it all their lives. If you're in a supermarket in Denmark or like a tobacconist, they're in France, you see the PMU, the FDJ kiosks, or the Danske Spel little kind of window where you can buy your tickets, you know, put your coupon on, all this kind of stuff. They are seen and they are known, so people will gravitate towards them.
That's completely different. FDJ have had a sports betting brand, and they've been endemic in the market as sports betting for a long time. I actually want them to launch because just to prove the point, because I just do not believe they'll be anywhere near the top, or they would have been even if they launched straight away.
Because you're going to have to wait a year for that now. Yeah, look,
Betano and Bet365 have been in the market for years, so they're never going to compete on that.
I know, but I think in a regulated market, when that came online, I think they would get an influx of customers. What sort of revenue are we talking about for Caixa in the past year? Just to give listeners an idea of the scale of that business.
Yeah, but it's a lottery business. You can't compare the two.
I know. It's apples and oranges, but it's still... Like, it still can work. Because what's like... Well, I mean, the Danske Spel model, let's call it. You know, you have Danske Spel, but then you have Danske Licens or Licens Spel.
Danske had a monopoly on betting in the market before it launched.
But then they created this digital offshoot where they have that experience. And you could argue that that's sort of what Veikhaus is doing with this new, as they prepare for it. been some very good coverage of Finland from Nicole Macedo and Jake Nordland and iGamingBusiness.com.
Talking about regulation, it's interesting about the affiliate being banned in Finland. Okay, to put it into context, so let's have a look. Lottery market, 2.65 billion euros GGR.
Okay.
Last year, if we look at the onshore market, onshore online betting and gaming, 5.8. So, over double the size. They're not, anyway, I just don't believe they're going to get anywhere near it. But, by the sounds of it, whether they launch, the way, there is one way they'll be number one operator.
What's that?
And that's if some plans that some people have of shutting down the entire commercial market and making it a cash monopoly, that will put them in pole position.
That's not going to happen. You know that's not going to happen.
There's talks.
No, it's like, it's...
What, I mean,
it's court...
Yeah, Lula is apparently, he's just doing this, so he says he's done it for the event as well. But, stuff happens. Anyway, that's how they get to number one. But look, we always talk about Brazil. We always talk about prediction markets. Next, you'll be telling me about the Netherlands, which we don't want to do.
Why don't we talk about prize draws?
What about prize draws?
The prize draw market in the UK.
Oh, don't tell me you've just entered this, a maze or something to win a house in the Cotswolds, have you?
No, I haven't. But it's just... Like, it's something we've been talking about in the team, and it's quite an interesting little sector because, obviously, in terms of player spend, 1.3 billion, so far smaller than the National Lottery, we think is about 8.2, something like that. Player base, 7.4 million, prize draw players. But it's very young. So, I think it was last year, the DCMS did a report kind of on the sector and whether or not they were going to look at some form of regulation, and ultimately they decided against it. But most of the companies in the sector, I think it was 44% of the companies in the sector were incorporated post 2020. So only the last 6 years, a big chunk of them, kind of like two-fifths of the market is two-fifths of the operators in the market came in the past 6 years. So that suggests it's kind of very early stage. You did mention Amaze. Have you seen the advert? Actually, you don't have Instagram, but
no.
But I'm sure there are other mediums that you might have access to, like TV or wireless or. I don't know what kind of, it's like they probably advertise in print. I think Omaze swallows up about 60% of the customer base.
Did they advertise on iGamingBusiness.com? Because that's the only, that's my main source of information.
Well, then I'm sure you read Nicole Macedo's article about prize draws a few days ago. Or maybe a week or so ago.
I missed that one. Anyway, so I'm just wondering, okay, so... Prize draws young. I don't think it's a big niche. I mean, I'm surprised it's that size, but a niche. Yeah, when you say spend, well, I suppose it is kind of.
So this is people entering. Yeah. So obviously with this sector, essentially you can either have them totally free, which just makes it. That's just going to be essentially a kind of lead gen exercise, data capture. You can have it free entries plus paid entries, where the free entries are generally oddly difficult, so most people just buy tickets, but because that option's there, or there's an element of skill where it's generally a pretty easy question. So it could be, what kind of animal is Lassie? And then you have an option of dog, horse. Which, they're kind of easy to get in. But you think about where the market is. We've obviously had the remote gaming duty hike. You've got sports.
I'm so intrigued as to whether this ramble has a solid point for our listeners. I have no idea where we're going with this.
But I know.
I like how you've tried to tie in the remote gaming duty hikes. Keep going. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to keep going. So for an industry that is obviously taking some brickbats, if that's the right context to use that phrase, it's just quite nice to say. This is a sector that the government has essentially said, we don't see the need to properly regulate. It's got a voluntary code of conduct, which is, you know, don't market to people under the age of 18, let them self-exclude, and don't make advertising too kind of outlandish, you know, don't make it seem too much of a sure thing. So the government has essentially looked at it and isn't going to do anything. Do you see this as a product that could be used to potentially mitigate or to, you know, almost kind of take some, almost even monetize the acquisition funnel for real money gaming operators buffeted by public scrutiny, the remote gaming duty hike, and perceived worsening public perception?
No.
Why not?
Also, perhaps if you just messaged me, I don't know, an hour ago and gone, hey Ed, we're going to go into something really random and off topic, prize draws, as a heads up. But okay, because I think it's completely, it's just completely different. It's like, if you want to call it a soft, very soft version, it's a bit like the lottery, you know, people are, I'm going to go with the Omaze, although I appreciate there's other things and...
I mean, Omaze is with us, but,
you know, it's like for a watch or something, and it's almost, you're almost like bidding almost kind of thing as well, isn't it? And things like that. So, but let's just go that, you know, like a lottery is, okay, I'm willing to spend 50 quid or 10 quid, whatever it costs, or the lottery ticket, £2. Because if I win, I'm going to get a house in the Cotswolds, which I can't afford to live in, but hey, I can sell it. Or, you know, you're going to get something that's life-changing, materially different, and they can obviously afford, or hopefully can afford, the input price. Whereas, you know, sports betting slots, I don't think people, I know there's jackpots and things like that, but I don't think many people play slots to win life-changing amounts of money. You know, it's a form of entertainment, or, you know, they're doing it because of low RTP. And actually, we can go onto the RTP in the UK, because that's another thing in a second.
Yeah.
Segued this most random conversation into something remotely useful. But again, on sports betting, I would guess, and I have zero data for this, even H2 has zero data on this, I would guess a significant majority of people who do sports betting have never placed a wager where their potential winnings are what you would call life-changing. Yeah? I mean,
yeah.
Most people who do long, long odds would put like a quid or even 10 quid on it. And, you know, if someone's doing 100 quid on it, then it means they can probably afford it. And for them, if it's, you know, if it's 1,000-1 odds, then it's 100 grand possibly isn't life-changing for them. You know, this isn't talking about winning a lottery or winning a £3 million house. So I don't think it's the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the size of the wagering market, I'm assuming the number of the prize draws you gave me of the 1.8 billion or whatever, that will just be tickets bought. So that's turnover. So it's actually a tiny, tiny fraction of the real money gaming market. So with everything going on, you know, if you're a Flutter or anyone else, Midnight or the name of company, you know, and you're focused on trying to gain share, you know, and keep people from going to the illegal markets, then wasting resource and brain space on that, I think, would be a waste of time. So, but let's talk about RTPs, because it's almost as if we've written this for like a plan of what we were going to do, because we knew what was going to happen over the year. So we had a few months ago, Big Daddy Gaming. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
And we asked them, I can't remember if it was you or me, one of us asked about a very good question about RTP, so I imagine it was me.
That doesn't sound right.
It does, because remember what happened is you were just doing lots of fluff questions, being like, oh, come on our podcast and you can, you know, promote yourself. And I was asking the hard-hitting stuff. The deep... But, you know, positive.
Well, that's going to...
That, not some negative. Okay.
That's going to get bleeped.
Okay. The insightful... Anyway.
The insightful...
I asked about RTP, and they gave... I can't remember exactly what it was, but they gave an insightful response, which... Can you remember exactly what they said? But it wasn't like...
You know, I don't remember exactly what they said.
That was it.
What?
I asked about the RTP and said, effectively, if they could just change the RTP from 96%. So for those who don't know, RTP, return to player. Okay? So every 96%, every £100 I wager on spins, on average, over thousands and thousands of games, I will get £96 back. Okay? So, and they keep four.
Yeah.
So if they change it from 100 to 92, then I'm saying they're not just going to double the amount of revenue they get. I mean, if it was that easy, they would have done it already.
And yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I said, and the reason they haven't is because the lower RTP to the customer,
the less far the customer's money will go.
Yeah, it'll go less. And
the less the entertainment value...
The less the entertainment and the experience
going,
worth.
Yeah, they're good. They're less likely to trigger any kind of bonus round. So, again, they won't win life-changing.
So they have already decided over a number of years, this is the optimal RTP.
Yeah. Okay?
Now, and where this changes, where they have to change it, is where there's a tax on turnover. So if you're being taxed 5% of turnover, like in Germany, you can't just pay, you know, get 4% of turnover as your revenue. But in markets where you're taxed on GGR, this is a kind of standard. Everyone's kind of realised this is it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the guys at Big Daddy Gaming said, which I thought was interesting, said, I don't think it will impact, or the customer will notice that much. Because one... The theoretical RTP is over such a large number of games, it may not impact one person particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think is, you know, okay. I get the point, but... and the second one, he said a lot of it is hidden in the bonus rounds rather than just the actual game. So it is not quite as simple as, okay, they're now going to have less enjoyment and maybe some people won't realise... But on the flip side, if it was so just as simple as we'll get a lot more money, then they would have done it before. So, based on all of that, Robin, and your photographic memory and recall of the discussion we had with it that I didn't need to explain to you, do you think this is a good or bad thing?
I think, on balance, it's probably a bad thing.
For the operators or the players or both?
I think for the operators and the players, because I think ultimately, if you know, as I say, if the money doesn't stretch as far, if the you know the, essentially the entertainment value declines, they're going to spend less time on site.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that they hop around games more, trying to get that kind of value, or they could turn to other products.
Maybe illegal providers, and to be honest.
Of course, yeah, but equally...
Yeah, but if the...
Hear me out, maybe
the operator,
they decide they want a bigger thrill and are prepared to wait a longer period of time, and then they think, fuck, a house in the Cotswolds.
No, how on earth did he bring it back to that? I walked into it.
You really did, but look, this.
No, but could you say actually legal operators are, you know, pushing them in a way, giving them a helping hand towards illegal ones by making the offering, and they'll argue that they're being forced into it. But
Well, it's going to be a bit of a kind of circular firing squad, isn't it, to say that? Because, you know, the regulators will blame perceived harm caused by the industry. The operators will blame government. The government will blame the regulators for not policing the market. And the illegal operators would just sit there, you know, kind of like holding open the velvet curtain going, come on in.
And then, so let's look at a scenario like this, okay? Mm-hmm. So it is an effective way of higher monetization of the players, getting them to spend more, yeah? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And play for longer, increase session duration.
No, but let's say they're losing money quicker, yeah? So they're not playing as long.
Money quicker.
But you're getting more money, so you're getting twice as much money per spin.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say they're spending 25% less time on there. So spending 50% more. Okay? Ballpark. Okay.
Yeah.
So how's the industry look after this happens? Most people have said this is like the biggest disaster and half the market will be illegal and blah, blah, blah. Clearly that's not true.
No.
We put a report out saying that it's just massively overhyped. The impact, it's not good for the industry, but, you know, we actually don't have the market going down, okay? We have a break.
Would you revise that on the basis that people are going to cut RTP, which may reduce the attractiveness of slots on the illegal market?
Increase the attractiveness of slots on the illegal market?
Decrease. Increase on the illegal, decrease on the legal.
No, because I'm not a slot guru. Personally, I find them dull as dishwater.
I quite like them.
But, you know, I'm assuming that there's some people more knowledgeable about slots than me who have done analysis saying that this will make them more money. Okay? All right.
Okay.
So when we have more information, we'll reevaluate our numbers. But we have the market still growing, just not as quickly as it was before. Okay?
Okay.
And so let's say it plays out that this happens as we've forecast. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The market continues to grow. Yes, the illegal market grows by more, but the legal market continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Operators are making less money because of the tax. Suppliers are making less money because of the tax. Affiliates are making less money because of the tax. But the market's still growing. And the government is getting more money. Okay. Not as much as just the whole, you know, previous things and dumbing it, but they're still getting more money than they were before.
Yeah, of course.
If you're the government, you're just going, hang on. You were telling me this was going to be a complete cluster bomb, yeah? Just a and the legal market is going to be out of control, etc. Okay, they can look at our numbers and believe the illegal market's grown or not, but you know, for most people, it's pretty easy to put your head in the sand. So all they look at is say, okay, you've changed your pricing. Okay, you're making less money as a gambling company, but I'm an MP, I don't give a crap, okay? There's more tax revenue, and the market's still higher than it was when it was at 21%.
Mm-hmm.
So I just actually think the industry is going to be in a worse position because having cried a lot of wolf, and I'm not 40% tax shouldn't happen. It is bad for the industry. I'm not defending it in any way. But I think, especially with doing tactics like this, which they're being forced to a certain extent, the industry will continue to grow, and then the government will just be like, well, what were you moaning about, you know? And then they'll come back to them again for more stuff in a few years' time and say, well, last time you told us it was going to cripple you and it didn't. So, yeah. They're not upset there's a few betting shops being closed by Evoke. You know, they'll see the industry growing. Unlike Switzerland, where you have the legal industry, you know, that was up by 1.2% last year.
Mm-hmm.
Onshore, online. Land-based down, total regulated market down. You know, unregulated market up. That's issues, but I'm going into a cul-de-sac here, so come on, Robin, rescue it and tell us what we're going to... We need to talk about something, and quickly, because it's near the end of the episode, that's actually going to be interesting, so we can say this episode is about... ...
Well, I mean, I think we've almost kind of done this. This has almost been a bit like doing a clip show of past episodes. We've talked about prediction markets, we've talked about Brazil... We've talked about RTP and the danger of crying wolf. We've talked about Big Daddy and that episode and bringing back some of those themes. And then
oh, I've
in the middle
one.
Of it,
I've
oh, God,
one.
What? in the middle of it, I chucked in something new, fresh and interesting, and you just dismissed it out of hand.
I've got one.
All right. All right, on you go.
21st of April, the Consumer Federation of America filed suit against Meta, saying it was knowingly targets and profits from fraudulent ads while misleading users about platform safety, and that gambling was a major contributor to this, illegal gambling. Now, when I was at ICE, I spoke to a few people who are either legal operators or on the regulator side of things, etc. And a pretty recurring theme was when they'd approached Meta about blocking illegal operators from gambling, Meta turned around and pretty much said, in a slightly polite way, go do one.
The other attendees of the World Gaming Forum may have also noticed a panel on this very subject.
So, quite frankly, Meta deserve pushback because they don't care, and they are, this is not controversial to say, they are a major, if not the predominant, source of advertising for illegal gambling.
Yeah, that's fair to say. I think there is a role. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously there is a role for big tech in stamping out the illegal market, but
they don't care.
It's like, yeah, I mean,
money. They don't give a. They don't.
Yeah, like this is one of the things. You know, we're obviously very embedded in the industry, and we think about it every day, and some days, in your case, when you're not inter-railing, we think about it every day. You know, but you know, essentially, we live and breathe it because we do that too. Because out of, let's face it, Stockholm syndrome. Because once you get into gambling, you never leave. It's one of those industries, but also out of, you know, beyond Stockholm syndrome, like a bit of a genuine love of the industry. It's a fascinating place to be, especially online, where you've essentially, you know, over the past, the worrying, like almost two decades I've been in the industry now, you've seen it kind of emerge and grow and evolve and stuff you never saw happen, like, you know, the US doing sports betting when I started in 2010, all the focus was online poker, California. You know, I mean, like we live and breathe the industry. But then when you sort of zoom out, when you think about subjects like illegal gambling, you know, kind of illegal advertising, you suddenly realize we are just a blip to a company like Meta, even to, you know, some of the federal authorities in the US, the AGA has obviously written to them and kind of pushed for action, and there's very little going on.
That's true. That is true.
It's ultimately, we're, you know, like a stone in the shoe of a lot of these other industries. Mm. We're a niche within a niche.
So I actually took a break from thinking about gambling on Saturday.
And why? Went
fly fishing. The first
time. All right.
Well, I was going through, it turns out I have 14 fishing rods, the majority of which I inherited from my late father. So I was going through those and all the stuff. I don't know why I've had it since 2021.
Right.
But just
because you were saying I was going through and I'm just waiting for a midlife crisis.
No.
Crisis.
So, you know, I went fly fishing, didn't get a single bite, but, you know, it's enjoyable.
Nice.
Peaceful out there, just on my own, casting the fly onto the lake. Yeah. Anyway, try and segue that into something. Right, on that note, you can find us on...
So, just like the lure flies through the air as it heads towards the water, this podcast will be flying over the airwaves onto all your favourite podcasting platforms, whether that's Spotify, whether that's Deezer, whether that's Apple Podcasts, whether that's Castos, YouTube, iGamingBusiness.com. We have very much enjoyed this weirdly structured episode.
There was no structure.
Oh, come on. Inadvertently, there was a sort of weird loose structure that developed without us. In terms of how we segued onto stuff, we didn't mean to do any of that, but somehow we did.
Look, we should also just talk very briefly about the biggest topic this week. So, you know, to show we don't hide from stuff that other people do. Sport Radar, short selling, being accused of operating with illegal operators, black markets, etc. Okay. One thing I would say on that is I think it also opens up the debate again, not for what they've allegedly done, but I think it does open up the debate about whether companies who are commercial data providers should also be integrity monitors. And the reason I mention that is because Alberta has announced it's launching in July. And they, I think like Ontario, do not allow commercial data providers to be integrity monitors. They view it as a conflict of interest. So like IBEA will be the main monitor there. In Brazil, you know, you have IBEA, but also Sport Radar are allowed to be a monitor. And you know,
and Genius, and
yeah,
perform to a lesser extent. Yeah, of course. Like, it's an interesting point. I will say, in mitigation, they do ring fence off that business. It's not almost, I think it's run from, like, just from previous conversations, as a kind of like a break even business rather than a revenue generator. But I do agree there is. It's a naughty situation, and it could even be, it could even be a case of almost spinning off as a sort of foundation, that kind of thing.
And in terms of the industry as a whole, you know, having this, because investigations, I believe, are now happening, and there will be kind of cases, you know, by shareholders who have said they lost money, you know, this at a time when, imagine at some point there'll be more on the evolution Playtech thing. It's not a good look for the industry, is it?
These short seller reports are interesting because on one level you could have, it can be presented as bad actors or kind of like bad faith, kind of, you know, trying to undermine competitors. Equally, these reports, you can, you know, generally it's a fairly broad brush denial. Like, what I'd really like to see actually is in these situations, someone come out and provide a very, very, you know, very detailed point by point, rebuttal. Sorry, that's the word.
Yeah, well, I mean, look. Okay, yeah, there's the whole Playtech thing, you know, you can discuss how much of that's undermined competitors. This one, you know, you can say the short sellers have got what they wanted. They put the report out. Shares dropped 25%. They made money. Job done. But I would imagine that if all of this could be proved, that was in the report, proved to be false, and it can be hard to prove a negative as well. I'm not saying just because it's not proven false doesn't mean that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But with these short selling reports, you have to be very careful because surely this leaves them open to, like, huge potential losses and lawsuits if anything they say or anything material they say proves out to not be true. So,
yeah.
You know, I suppose there's different views on whether short selling should be allowed, etc., and if it's right, but quite frankly, if you do see, if they are seeing, not Radar, but a company, they're like, well, hang on, stuff they're saying is just completely wrong, you know, and they're overvalued from that, then,
mm-hmm.
you know. But maybe there's a place for them, but I think it will be interesting to see how this unfolds, and whichever way it does, again, not good for the industry.
No. But on that note, slightly more somber than the one I hope we were ending on, but never mind. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back hopefully sooner than every other week if Ed's, I don't know, where are you going next? A camping trip or something? Going to Disneyland?
Yeah, if we're going to go camping. I am trying not to leave the UK again until SBC Lisbon.
Okay.
That's the aim. I'll be around next week, so, you know. Why don't we even try and coordinate beforehand and discuss what we're going to talk about and put a structure in here?
Yeah, we did, but then you didn't seem to like that.
Yeah.
You always seemed to be a bit sulky when I'd sent you things to talk about.
Yeah. Okay, good chat. Anyway. Also, good use of the word brickbats. earlier in the episode.
Thank you. Thank you, yeah. Right, thank you very much for listening, everyone, and we will be back alarmingly soon with the next one.